sometimes bookshops can be very middle class and off-putting for some people, or intimidating spaces. And it's really important to me that bookshops aren't intimidating.
Hello and welcome. This is Queer Recollections. It's a podcast where we're exploring and rethinking queer British history. Sitting in a small shop front with large capital letters declaring its existence is Gaze the Word, one of a tiny handful of remaining LGBTQ bookshops. It was initially inspired by lesbian and gay bookshops in the US and set up by a man called Ernest Hull in 1979 as a place to buy hard-to-find lesbian, gay and feminist literature. The council, either thinking it was a joke or a front for a pawn shop because of his name, initially ignored Ernest Hull's request for a lease, but he managed to set it up, and soon after he did, it wasn't only a bookshop but a meeting place and information resource and also a community space. And throughout its existence, it's hosted various groups, including the Lesbian Discussion Group, Trans London, a gay black group, and also Lesbians and Gay Support the Miners, who were immortalised in the film Pride. In this episode, I speak to Jim McSweeney, who is the manager at Gaze the Word and has worked there since 1989, which is 10 years after its founding. And his dedication to this small but mighty space has made it what it is today. And he's seen it go through many changes. You know, it survived the growth of the commercial scene, it survived gentrification and rent increases and raids by the police and homophobic attacks. So we talk about the history of the bookshop, also about how small independent queer businesses can survive in this climate, and the thousands of lives that have been changed through the small, profound moments that happen within the shop on a daily basis.
I love the bookshop. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm still there. I love working in the bookshop. And more than anything, I love the people who come in, our customers. Now, I have seen it go from being, you know, extraordinarily important to being dusty and forgotten to suddenly becoming iconic again. And in a time when independent bookshops all over the UK and all over the world have closed, and certainly LGBT bookshops have closed, to be one where you're suddenly like last man standing and have become really important and iconic, that's very special. So there's a great feeling of pride that you're holding a space that is not just a bookshop, but it's perhaps a place that's become of historic importance and is also an archive.
Why do you think it's survived so long when, you know, other queer bookshops and independent bookshops and also queer clubs and other sort of community spaces have closed over the years?
In our history, we've had various different fights. Back in 1984, Customs and Excise raided the bookshop and seized all the American stock. And there was then a sort of two-year battle, a Defend Gaze the Word campaign, and fighting Customs and Excise and raising awareness and raising money.
A quick aside, not only did the raid confiscate and damage thousands of pounds of stock, but the shop directors were charged under a Victorian law, the Customs Consolidation Act, with conspiracy to import indecent books. And a massive campaign, defence campaign, sprung up around this, and it involved not only LGBT groups, but MPs, writers, trade unions, all united against this attack on freedom of expression. And as Jim said, 2 years later, the charges were dropped.
In the 90s, general bookshops looking for new areas of growth created lesbian and gay sections, and Borders opened in the UK and Waterstone started at gay sections. And that really impacted on the bookshop, because before then, if you wanted LGBT books, you came to Gaze the Word. And suddenly you didn't have to. And while that's wonderful that books are now available everywhere, of course it impacts on our business. In, I suppose, early 2000, things had gradually gotten worse and we were facing closure because people just weren't using us. At that point, Soho had taken off and people could go and get books in Prowler or wherever. And we were definitely forgotten. We were about to close and we put word out that this is what was happening. And it got picked up by the press and it was extraordinary. We had a sponsor shelf campaign and people sponsored shelves for £100. We got coverage and, you know, picked up by the BBC and the Guardian and the Times and the Independent and QX were great. This is before you have crowdfunders, GoFundMe. It's before there's Facebook and social media. So word went out and people were suddenly aware of a place that they'd taken for granted was in danger of closing, and the response was enormous. Since then, we survived that, and then it's just continued. And then the next sort of fillip, I suppose, that happened was the film Pride. I certainly didn't expect when Pride the film, and Pride the film is about the London, about the lesbians and gays support the miners and the miners strike of 84. And while LGSM met in lots of other places, they did meet in the bookshop and they used to collect money outside. In the film, it's as if they only met in the bookshop because we're the only place still existing of the places where they met. But that's brought a huge amount of attention and focus on the bookshop. And people travel from all over to visit the bookshop. And that's really surprised us. Actually, or maybe it's just surprised me, but I thought, oh my gosh. And what that's bringing in, it's new generations of people. And that's been fantastic. The other thing that's really changed is social media. The growth of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram have been huge elements in our success. But it's allowed us to put word out there that, you know, about new books or events that are happening. In the old days, you only got publicity in newspapers if you were paying for an advert or if a window had been broken or you were in dire distress because of a new rent increase. When that was it. It's always about bad news. Whereas now we can do all this positive stuff. You know, it's fantastic.
I want to go back to something you were saying before about when you were in financial trouble. I remember seeing this documentary. I think it was filmed in 2007 or 2008. And it's really interesting because the kind of energy of the shop's really different. And I think there's the possibility of the shop closing in a matter of months. And obviously you start that campaign. Why do you think there was such an outpouring of love and support for the bookshop?
It's a very tricky thing when you're in difficulties. When you're very successful, it's very easy to attract people, I think. But if you're in difficulties and you're complaining a lot about, oh, we've got a rent increase or this is difficult, people eventually zone out and get turned off. It's one thing to support a happening space where it's dynamic and it's exciting and you go. And this is why people come to us now, because of the events and the people, and there's a buzz and an energy. It's much more difficult if you're going in and the wind is blowing through the bookshop. There's a feeling of, well, I should do this. So our customer base were getting older, new generations weren't coming in, and the wind was blowing through the shop. We were taken aback by the amount of support we got when word went out. We then wondered, would that die off? But people woke up to the fact that it was a unique institution where it was run by the community for the community. I mean, that's one of the exciting things, I think, about the shop is when we're stocking books, it's a real sort of repository of our history and of our culture. Rather than, well, this isn't working, let's reduce this gay section in the shop. As used to happen in some of the big bookshops, where it would open with a flourish and slowly get smaller and smaller, or just end up being erotic fiction and eventually end up under the stairs or hidden away. We're here, we're very visible, and we're claiming our space. And I love when you're seeing young people coming in, you know, 16, 17, and they're with friends and talking loudly about books they like or they don't like, or they're holding hands or steal a kiss, or they buy a badge, or they're claiming their space as, you know, queer or lesbian, gay, bi, non-binary, trans. And that's a joy to see, their confidence. And I'm sometimes touched when you're aware they're wearing badges that they will wear in the bookshop and take them off when they're at home. It feels as queer spaces close in London and other places because of rent increases and gentrification, and because of ways that certainly gay men meet. You know, they now don't need to go to a bar, they can meet, you know, on Grindr or Scruff or all the other platforms, where there is a space where people come in and can just be themselves. And that's, we see that all the time. You know, when shoulders just come down, or and that's one of the pleasures of being on the till, when you see how people respond to coming into the space. It's not just a bookshop. So it's what I'm seeing is the whole range of LGBT experience, from people who are 14 to people who are 90. And that's really nice to see. And you don't see that in many other places. But there's not many places where we as a community, as a whole, come together, and in the course of a day or a week, I'll see a whole range of people like that.
It's very true. I think that our community as well is so segregated along, you know, lines of you know, gender, identity, age, etc., etc. And it's really, really rare you have a physical space where people can actually be together and come together. I'm wondering on that point, how you represent, you know, all the intersections of the community in the bookshop, considering the fact that it is quite small. You know, is there ever compromise between space?
It's becoming slightly more complex as we've with identity politics in the last few years. In the old days, we just had lesbian fiction and gay fiction. And we used to have a fiction by women as well when we were feminist. And then there would be, you know, politics. We've always had what was then known as the TVTS section, which would be one shelf, I think. And we used to have the TVTS newsletter, which was a very important free weekly newspaper. It is interesting now with new fiction, and I suppose it's more represented in young adult literature, where it doesn't fall easily into categories of lesbian or gay, and it'll be bi or non-binary or trans, and where you place the books. I suppose we used to have one or two shelves on trans, and these days it's a whole bank of shelves. And some of that is fiction, most of that is theory, because there's so many new books coming out and lots of books being published in the UK, which is great, because we used to have to import most of it in from the US. And they're probably in a position for now where lesbian and gay politics was 20 years ago, you know, where lots of books are coming out and lots of new challenges. And people are interested and they're coming in and reading. It is important to me that, you know, and you know, in all the years I've worked here, I've made sure that the staff I take on, that one of the first things they are is friendly. There isn't any attitude, and that they're easygoing, because they may be in the process of coming out, and this is a really big issue, which is why you sometimes have people, you know, will suddenly get tearful, get emotional, or at the end of a transaction may shake your hand, and you want them to go out feeling strong, but also the reason we're there and exist is for them. It's a community bookshop. You know, it's not just about making a buck. Obviously, we have to make money to cover our bills, but at the end of the day, we're there for the community. We're community-led. I hope that doesn't sound too worthy, but you know that is
No,
what it,
it's beautifully put.
that's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that the LGBT community in general have lost that sense of community as we've won more rights?
Interesting, because I would break it down. Being lesbian and gay is a lot easier, and we can assimilate into society. Where, I mean, what you want is that it's not an issue, and possibly the least interesting thing about you is the fact that you're gay or you're lesbian, and you can just get on with your life and find love and work and have a good time and engage with the world. I mean, that's what you're hopefully moving towards. There is always going to be spaces for people who are more radical or who kick against the world in a different way, and that's great too, and that's really important. For people who are bisexual, I mean, if I think back into the 80s and how bisexual people were viewed upon by the lesbian and gay community, thinking, oh my God, certainly with suspicion and with hostility, it was about make your mind up, or, oh, you're really gay, you're really lesbian. You know? And that dismissal of bisexual experience. And it's, I'm really pleased to see, I mean, more recently there have been two books, the Bible, volumes one and volume two, which have come out from a small Monsters Regiment, a small publisher in the north of England, reflecting bisexual experience in the UK. And it's fantastic when I see young people coming in buying by badges or flags or books, and they're claiming their space. And it's getting easier for people who are bi to speak their truth. And then you get people who are trans or non-binary, who again are experiencing problems and issues the way lesbians and gays don't, and again have to kick against society and claim their space. And there are more books coming out there. So if you think of a blanket way, the LGBT experience is so varied within that. So some people, it's become much more easy and they can just get on with their lives. And for other people, it will be a real struggle and they have to challenge. And I haven't even looked at people who are ace or intersex, you know, more invisible again. But there are more books coming out, and there's also more stuff on the internet and on YouTube where young people talk about their truths, and that's always interesting. I think it'll be very difficult if you're living in a Western society and you have the privilege of having access to a computer, so I'm accepting that, to feel that you're the only one, which was possibly my experience when I was 14 in Ireland, and the horror of what the hell was going on with hormones, and I had no idea. I was also innocent, but, you know, and clueless, but I had no idea of that whole world that was out there, and just didn't read the signs, because, you know, whereas these days young people can access information in so many different ways.
We move on to talk about how you create a genuinely welcoming environment, and also about some of those beautiful moments that happen within the shop itself.
As far as I'm concerned, it's about respect. And if you're coming into the bookshop, I welcome you. And you're there, we're there to look after you. And that's important. So that's about part of being non-judgmental, that it's a friendly space. Sometimes bookshops can be very middle class. Off-putting for some people, or intimidating spaces. And it's really important to me that bookshops aren't that the bookshop isn't intimidating. So some people are buying romances and thrillers, and someone else is buying poetry, and someone else is buying queer theory. All of that is great, you know, we're all part of the community, and if we can stock it, I'm more than delighted to have it. I remember when I first was coming out and my embarrassment buying a copy of Gay News in W.H. Smith. and like, you know, blushing and picking it up and hoping nobody would see me. And just like my nervousness, it wasn't even like an erotic magazine or anything. I couldn't even have looked at that. Just buying a copy of Gay News, you know, and I'm 22, you know. And I thought, God, and I don't want anyone who's in the bookshop to be embarrassed or feel diminished, you know, by what they're buying or by how they're treated by the staff. Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, it really does.
I remember more recently a young man came in with his dad, walked around looking at books, and then came up. They were very unfazed, which I noticed. Then he came up and he bought selected some books, and then he came up to buy them and then looked at badges. I totted up the books for him, and then he still had some money left. So he bought some badges, and then they started talking to me. And they had seen the film Pride, and they'd come up specially to see the bookshop. And we talked for a bit more. And then when they're leaving, they both shook my hand. And I was really touched by the dad, because you see it with mum sometimes, but he was there to support his son. And his son was coming in, and it was a big thing. But just how unfazed he was and how relaxed he was. And that gives me hope for the next generation, where you get more, we get to see more and more of that, of parents being totally accepting of their kids when they come out. And that's a fantastic thing. And that's something I've really seen in the last 20 years. I did have a young 6 foot bloke. He was from India, and he came in, bought a book, I think Tom of Finland, and then came up to the till. And then he started to talk. And lots of people tell stories, you know, and he started to talk and said that he had used to be, when he was studying in London, he was from Mumbai, he was on holiday. But when he'd studied in London a few years back, he'd lived up the road from the shop and the halls of residence, and used to pass the bookshop and could never come in. And he had come in today, it was his first time, he was on holiday, and he was pansexual. And we talked for a bit, and then we talked about what LGBT life is like for people in India. And then he asked for a hug. So I stood up and said, of course, stood up and gave him a hug. And it was really nice. But it was that one of those moments of how someone has changed, but also you never know the effect the existence of the bookshop can have on somebody. Because with an unambiguous title like Gay is the Word, it's difficult to not know what we are. And we're there with big plate glass windows on the street. You know, we're very visible. That can be a small issue for people if, you know, if they have the sexuality about coming in, but we're there. And I think that's fascinating that people are there, and maybe, you know, they'll come back or just make a note of it. I know when I first came to London in 78 on holiday, but I remember, you know, walking down spaces and suddenly seeing, say, a sex shop in London that was gay, like it was Stud, there were shops, and just noticing them, not having the nerve to come in, and I didn't come out till I was 22, but just noting that, and it was so different from where I was coming from and the country I lived in, and it was both shocking and exciting, and there was a feeling of what if and if only. But I wasn't ready for it yet. I mean, one of the things, you will never lose money if you're selling stuff that's sexual. I mean, Things have changed now. That was one of the things about Gay is the Word. We were set up as a serious bookshop, and we didn't stock erotica. We had different ideals at the start, you know. And even at the start, you know, they didn't stock books on religion or books on therapy, because both were seen as being anti-gay and problematic. Later on, you know, we did stock books on therapy and religion. If it was coming sexuality from a positive perspective, but, you know, back in 79, most books were about, you know, pray until pray and it will go away, or how to cure your sexuality type thing. So, but it was coming out of more hardline politics where things had to be positive as we started to change the world.
Mm.
Nowadays, when you when porn is everywhere, you know, free to download, or it's just available and it's ubiquitous, and you might think, oh, there's just so much of it. If you think back at a time when it wasn't freely available, and it was a really big thing to suddenly see these images which had been forbidden, which allowed you to claim pride in your sexuality. I mean, it had a real importance. And then it can go the other way, of course, where, you know, it promotes an idea of perfect bodies, or it's a different type of objectification. Again, back in the bookshop, I'm seeing early minutes of meetings where they're looking at books, if they're not stalking books that are sexist or racist or whatever, but also looking at books that were objectifying men and whether they should stalk this or not. You know, so you're coming with an idea of what is the ethos of the bookshop? What do you want to project? What do you want to sell? By the time I'm coming along, most of those battles, it's already established and it's very different. You know, but back in 79, when it started, all of those issues had to be worked out.
That was Jen McSweeney, longtime manager of Gaze the Word and someone who always has a book recommendation. I couldn't recommend visiting this bookshop enough. It's somewhere with so much soul and somewhere I always feel mentally refreshed after visiting. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening. Please do rate and subscribe. I'm Will, and this has been Queer Recollections.